Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
He was going to pay $529.
For a brace, I could have walked home, well, hobbled home, and Googled and had it in-house the next day for $150, brand new.
Megan, I think you described your family as very small, mostly dead, and crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
my family is scattered throughout institutions across the U.S.
My family's trauma began life as a manidu, or spirit, the one we call Windigo. The literal English translation for the word is cannibal. The Windigo, I've been told, is like a virus infecting its host with a depraved, insatiable hunger that leads the sufferer to feast on human flesh, and at last in desperation to devour even herself.
Welcome to this week's episode of the WVXU Discovery Podcast, Start Here. I'm Trip Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Get set for a quick overview and sample of three podcasts today, two national and one locally produced, to help you navigate the ever-growing world of the podcast phenomenon. Plus, we're introducing the all-new Start Here Blast weekly e-newsletter. You'll get a personalized email with a podcast we feature on Start Here. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here Blast email from the bottom of the page. Also, now you can rate Start Here on iTunes. And if you're a fan, a 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. So don't forget to rate us on iTunes today. And now, with special thanks for technical assistance from Cincinnati Public Radio's Jim Nolan and writing research and curation support by Connor Eldridge, it's time to Start Here. As the debate over the future of healthcare in the U.S. rages on, it's hard to avoid false information, inflated stats, and arguments based on anger or politics. That's why it's always important to take a step back, breathe, and examine the real cost of healthcare in our country. With the help of our first podcast, An Arm and a Leg, you can do just that. Host Dan Weissman, a veteran reporter for outlets like Marketplace, 99% Invisible, and Planet Money, brings you healthcare stories from across the country in an attempt to educate, empower, and help us empathize with one another. As the cost of medical care continues to skyrocket, An Arm and a Leg reminds us that even if we're all screwed, we're at least all screwed together. And the only way out of the mess is through compassion and cooperation. Try this sample of Arm and Leg on for size. It's the episode called Why Health Insurance Actually Sucks, and it examines the Wild West pricing style that exists almost strictly in the healthcare sector. Dan is joined by investigative reporter Jenny Gold to talk about insurance companies' tactics for allowing and even encouraging price gouging in hospitals, doctors' offices, and other healthcare providers. This clip features a story from one of the more tame instances of price gouging in the healthcare world.
Blake Valkyr's knee was killing him. Like, he couldn't sleep at night. He says he could feel his heartbeat in his femur. The knee was twice its normal size.
People that have had knee injuries fully understand the feeling of it. Everything was loose. Everything was pulled. Everything was inflamed. So there's the pain, but there's also that feeling like it could give out on you any second.
Doctors at a local hospital told him he needed a brace on his leg, and they sent him downstairs to get one. Bam! This thing locks his knee into place.
It's a wonderful device. I mean, it's I love it. I called it the Iron Maiden.
He went into work that day a happy man.
And I was thinking, you know, I wonder what they're going to charge the insurance company for this brace. And I looked on the side and I'm like, hey, you know, Google it. And I Google it. And
$150. He figures there'll be a little markup.
I kind of put it in the back of my head. Enjoyed using the brace as much as possible. Yeah. And then the bill came.
And what did it say?
$1,400.
Whoa. But this was an insurance statement from Blue Cross. And it said, hey, Blake, we knocked this crazy $1,400 bill down for you. Way down. We told him, make it $529. Which, because Blake hadn't paid his deductible for the year, was on him. He was going to pay $529.
For a brace, I could have walked home, well, hobbled home, and Googled and had it in-house the next day for $150. Brand new.
And you double, triple checked that this was the exact same thing.
Exact same, exact. Went right to the manufacturer's website, looked at where I could buy it. It's the exact same brace from the exact same manufacturer, not refurbished, not reused, nothing.
And yeah, Blake has shown me his insurance statement and the bills he got. This does not include a charge for fitting the brace or for the doc's consultation. None of that. And Blake's obviously isn't the most outrageous version of this story. That is kind of the point. It is a super everyday story, really. And it raises this really interesting question. Why would Blue Cross say $529 was an okay price for this thing? Like, seriously, why? If Blake had met his deductible for the year, they'd be paying that for a $150 device. Why would they allow this? I mean, it's not that I'm worried for them exactly, but what is the deal? Insurance companies say all the time, in statements like the one they sent Blake, that they're knocking down prices, which makes sense. They're buying in bulk. But it turns out, really not. Actually, insurance companies contribute to crazy prices. And ultimately, we end up with the bill. This brings us back to Jenny Gold and her reporting.
The first thing I did was I called the insurance companies.
Jenny looked at what insurance pays doctors for delivering a baby in the Bay Area. And what she found was, insurance does not pay all docs the same amount for this service, not even close. Independent doctors who own their own practices get like $2,400. Doctors who work for Stanford Medicine get paid more than double that, $5,200. And doctors who work for the University of California get more than triple, $8,000. And this all sounds like some insidery stuff, what insurance companies pay. But stay with me. It comes back to what all of us pay, including Blake and his leg brace. Jenny talked with Sarah Azad. She's an obstetrician in Mountain View, California. Sarah was totally inspired by her mom, who was also an obstetrician.
From the time we were young, my mom's patients loved her. She was a part of their lives. And that's just how I've always seen medical care.
So Dr. Azad runs the same kind of practice her mother did. Small, independent. But she's got a problem. After being in practice for 8 years, she's never been able to get an increase in the fee she gets from insurance.
Meanwhile, her rent is going up. She has to institute electronic health records. Things cost a lot of money. Running a practice is really expensive.
That rent increase alone is no joke. Dr. Azad told Jenny it was like 3% a year. So if she's been there 8 years, and if this calculator I found on Google is right, that means her rent is more than 25% higher than when she started. She tells Jenny, when she asks for a raise, the insurance companies say, tough luck.
Well, basically what they told her is, you have less than 2% of market share in this area, so we have no reason to increase your rates. Take us or leave us. If you don't want to take us as an insurance, fine, don't. We don't need you. The insurance companies simply can't say that to Stanford or another large hospital system because they have a much larger market share.
Uh-huh. This is why the insurance companies don't hold prices down. They can't. Not when they're negotiating with big players.
A sample from An Arm and a Leg with Dan Weissman helped make sense of one of the most costly and confusing parts of life with An Arm and a Leg podcast, available on WVXU's Podcast Central. This week's feature new addition to the Podcast Central collection comes to you from a face that you'll likely recognize. After 25 years at the late night desk, Conan O'Brien has realized the only people at his holiday parties are the men and women whom he works with. And despite years and years of in-depth interviews with some of the world's most famous celebrities, Conan has never really made a real and lasting friendship with any of his guests. So he started a podcast to do just that. Free from FCC regulations in his new podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, Conan finally gets the chance to hang out with some of his favorite people, off camera and off script. With guests like Pete Holmes, Will Ferrell, and Kristen Bell, the show is as hilarious as it is heartwarming. So take a listen to this clip from an episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, featuring married comedians Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally. Nick and Megan join the show to talk about, among other things, lovemaking in the woods, unusual fashion choices, sociopaths, and Nick's goals for the show Survivor. Nick and Megan feel ambivalent but hopeful about becoming Conan's friends. In this snippet, Megan talks about what her family is like.
Megan, I think you described your family as very small, mostly dead, and crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
my family is scattered throughout institutions across the U.S.
And your dad was a practical joker, but not necessarily a funny practical joker?
No, he had a very dark sense of humor. And for like a couple of examples of his humor would be, he and my mom and I would be sitting at the dinner table, and then my father would all of a sudden pretend that he was having a massive heart attack and then fall over. He'd really, you know, he did commit, I'll give him that, fall over into his plate of, you know, spaghetti or whatever. And the first time he did it, my mom and I were like, is he dead or what's going on? And then after that, we were just kind of like, you know, get out of the spaghetti. And then another time I came.
So your reaction when you thought it was real was to just wonder, huh, wonder if that's real or not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was probably terrifying. Why
you're, okay, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Because I was, you know, 8.
Good. Okay.
So it was really scary. I'm downplaying it for the sake of, you know, podcast listeners everywhere. I don't want to traumatize.
It sounds like it would scar you.
Yeah, I don't want to be taken into child services. Then another thing that he did was, like, I used to take the bus. The only year I took the bus was 3rd grade. So say I was 9. And I came in the door. I didn't like being alone with my father because he was really terrifying. And so I came in the door, and my mom's car wasn't there. And my father was standing at the top of the stairs. And I said, where's mommy? And he said, he had this vocal affectation that he did all the time. And he said, I'm sorry to tell you this, my darling, but your mother is dead. And for a second, I was like, wait. And then he said, and then he just kind of went on. He elaborated on how she had died. And it was like a lot of some children lose their parents at an early age, and it wasn't going to be an easy life. And finally I said, you know, where is she? And he said, the grocery store.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He also told me one time.
That's just, I mean.
No, it wasn't cute. And yeah. He also told me one time when I was in high school that he'd had to go to the doctor because he had a little skin cancer lesion on his ear. So he had to have it like removed. And I talked to him on the phone because my parents had been separated by then. And I said, how did it go? And he said, well, I'm sorry to tell you this, my darling, but they had to take the ear. And I said, oh, what? And he goes, yes, I don't want to frighten your little friends when I come by the house. And I said, I'm sorry to hear that. And he then did not correct himself until I saw him 2 weeks later, and he had 2 ears. And I was like, and he'd already forgotten about it by then.
Yeah, and the other thing is, he's clearly not amusing you. So who is this for? Just for himself?
He might have been a teeny weeny bit sociopathic, just a little.
That's a word that would apply.
In the cute way.
One of the cute sociopaths.
Yeah.
Unlike Leopold and Loeb.
No.
Look it up, kids. they were true sociopaths. I need to take a quick break, but we have so much more to talk about.
A sample from Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, a new podcast from Earwolf. Check out Conan's feeble attempts at friend-making on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, now available on WVXU's Podcast Central. Next up, our locally produced feature. It's called Blood Medicine, and it's a beautiful and terrible exploration of the history of trauma experienced by Native Americans throughout the history of the U.S., History is always whitewashed to look kindly on the victor, and the same goes for Native American history. Through in-depth research, firsthand stories, and more, Blood Medicine dismantles the epistemologies established by the white man and explores hidden wounds, betrayals, and stories that history couldn't erase. This is a clip from the first episode of Blood Medicine, which details the traumatic experiences of the Ojibwa families whose children attended mandatory Catholic boarding schools and the effects that permeated for generations. In this clip, the host explores the archives of the schools from the reservation to dismantle the trauma that's hung over her family for years.
I've written many articles trying to explain the Indian boarding school experience and how its poisons spilled over onto survivors' families. I thought my role as a journalist would protect me from my own family's traumas. I fancied that knowledge alone would take away our pain, but I was wrong. I have to tell my story not as a journalist, but as an Anishinaabekwe. My family's trauma began life as a Manidu, or spirit, the one we call Windigo. The literal English translation for the word is cannibal, but that Manidu, like most Ojibwa spirituality, is far more nuanced than such an artless definition. The Windigo, I've been told, is like a virus infecting its host with a depraved, insatiable hunger that leads the sufferer to feast on human flesh, and at last, in desperation, to devour even herself. Like a vampire or zombie in a modern TV show, the Windigo passes itself and its catastrophic hunger forward from one generation to the next. Our family's Wendigo was my mother's horrible, unspeakable secret. She worked hard to keep that Manidu at bay. Sometimes it would pursue her, trying to take over her mind. She would walk the floor, sometimes for hours, desperately shaking her head from side to side to keep the Wendigo from entering. She'd flap and wring her hands over and over again, as though to rid them of a clinging presence. She was lost to us during those times. Eventually, she would wind herself down, sometimes even laughing a bit in relief. She'd mutter, "Settle down, you crazy old chicken," before collapsing on her bed. That spirit and its awful doings cut her mind. I think she believed she would break into a million pieces if she recalled those amygdala events that held her hostage. So I remember them for her. I uncover the secret identity of that clinging presence, more awful than I could have imagined. In the process, I file down the monster's teeth, so although it can still deliver a sharp bite, it can't cut into us anymore. The only way is ceremony, that naked, wordless action of the heart. It's the only way we've ever had. I offer my asema, tobacco, and I begin. All the U.S.'s Catholic Indian boarding school records are stored in a special collections library at Marquette Catholic University in Milwaukee. Carefully preserved and tended, they lie in climate-controlled archival luxury. I made a special appointment with the archivist weeks in advance in order to examine them. I arrived at the library on a hot summer day. The manicured buildings and grounds of the school brought back memories of my own regimented days at Catholic school. I walked across campus to the library. I welcomed its chilly air after my long hike in the hot sun. More like a high-security bank than a library, the building's interior featured several state-of-the-art checkpoints at which I had to show my identification and provide the name of the person I was visiting. At last, I made my way to a cavernous room located in the deepest reaches of the building, where the Indian boarding school documents were kept. A receptionist guarded this entry as well. She eyed me suspiciously. The archivist had been called away, she told me, and would not be able to keep our appointment. He had, however, left a card of documents for me to review. I was allowed to bring in only my purse and given white cotton archivist's gloves to wear while I handled the documents. I was the sole visitor in the huge reading room. Although severe and spare, the room and its furnishings were made of the finest materials. The simple wooden study tables and chairs shone with a rich patina. I sat at one of the enormous tables and opened the first of many boxes. To my great disappointment, it contained multi-generational photocopies of lists of names of students at the various Catholic boarding schools that once dotted Indian country. I found the names of my mother and her siblings. The ink faded, written in that careful Catholic cursive penmanship that I knew all too well from my days at Catholic school. As a youngster, I labored terribly over my handwriting, never meeting the standard of the nuns at St. Patrick's School. I sat back heavily in my chair and breathed an exasperated sigh. I thought to myself, I came all this way for nothing. The room was chilly, and I trembled a bit, wishing I'd brought a sweater. I gazed up at the large oil portraits of notable Jesuit priests hung on the walls. Each was surrounded by heavy, elaborately carved wooden frames. I imagined they smiled down a little smugly at me. Their expressions exuded an air of disdain and corruption that permeated the room. Suddenly, the archivist arrived, a bit out of breath. Apologizing for his tardiness, he explained that even the original collection held very little personal information about any of the students who attended the school so long ago. The collection of original documents, he noted, was largely administrative, but I could view them if I liked. I'd come this far, so I said yes.
Our local feature, Blood Medicine, a local podcast about the untold stories of Native Americans. Listen now on WVXU's Podcast Central. To the charts we go. Our first visit to the Apple Podcast Charts for 2019 via iTunescharts.net. And what do we find? Well, Sarah and Jennifer Hart, both white, adopted six beautiful black children. On Jen's Facebook page, it looked as if they were the perfect blended family, even earning the nickname Hart Tribe from friends. Then on March 26, 2018, the family's GMC Yukon was found at the belly Yukon was found belly up on the rocks below California Highway 1. The news of the murder-suicide shocked their friends and made national headlines, leaving many wondering what possibly led to the fatal crash. Well, the podcast Broken Hearts investigates this question with more than 30 never-before-heard interviews. Co-hosts Justine Harmon and Elizabeth Egan, along with reporter Lauren Smiley, follow the family's journey from South Dakota through Minnesota, Oregon, and Washington, and finally to that 100-foot cliff in California. That's Broken Hearts, the first number one for 2019 on the Apple Podcast charts. That wraps up this episode of Start Here, WVXU's Discovery Podcast. And speaking of discovery, astronomical discovery, that is, you want to check out our newest original podcast, Looking Up, with Dean Regas and Anna Heyman. Dean's the outreach astronomer at the Cincinnati Observatory and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers and author of the book Facts from Space. Anna's the observatory's director of development with an innate curiosity about the cosmos. That's Looking Up, now at WVXU.org. And if you're turning into a podcast junkie and just can't get enough, try these two new discovery resources, NPR's The Big Listen with Laura Ober. You get an audio peek into great storytelling podcasts. And for a more blog-like written review and recommendation, NPR has Earbud.fm. They use unique categories to help you discover podcasts with things like advice, do it like a lady, and big ideas. And of course, Jim Nolan, Kevin Reynolds, and the WVXU staff feature our favorites on Podcast Central at WVXU.org. That's where we'll add your recommendations if you just email us at podcast@WVXU.org or call 513-294-8030 and leave us a voicemail. I'm Trip Eldridge for WVXU, and thank you for choosing to start here.